from KAKM. We'd appreciate hearing from you.
Thank you, Chairman Boucher, members of the committee. I really appreciate this opportunity to testify before you today. I have quite a list of things to say, but I think I'll shorten it down and try to be as brief as I can. You've heard this morning from quite a number of folks in rural Alaska who have only one service. I'd like to talk with you for a moment about what public radio and television is like in an urban setting and what differences we might be able to identify. The first thing I'd like to tell you is that two of the three most watched public television stations in America are located in Alaska, at KUAC in Fairbanks and KAKM in Anchorage. Over 50%, all the residents of South Central Alaska watch Channel 7 every week. That amounts to about 110,000 people weekly. We are the fourth highest in the nation in membership contributions per household. The average membership donation to Channel 7 is 20% higher than the national average at $60 per household. We are the 44th highest in the nation, Channel 7 is, in total underwriting. That ranks ahead of such stations as Atlanta, Tampa, and New Orleans. I raise these just to let you know that in order for Channel 7 to replace a total loss of state funds, we would have to ask our $100 members of this station to become $250 members, and that in a time when many people are either experiencing reductions in salaries or are in fact out of work. KAKM's direct contribution to just education and public safety is nearly equal to the amount we receive in state grants. We provide 410 hours of instructional television time for the Anchorage Community College and Matsu Community Colleges, equal to $147,000 annually. We provide 300 hours a year of airtime for the K through 12 instruction of students in the Matsu, Kenai, and Anchorage school districts, equal to $108,000. Our studio is provided for students at Anchorage Community College and the University of Alaska Journalism Departments for the training of students, and if you were to price that out, it would be at about $48,000 a year. Airtime for children's programs such as Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, 321 Contact, Square One, Newton's Apple would account for roughly $250,000 a year to acquire and broadcast those programs. Our program, Alaska Weather, goes statewide 5 days a week and is directly related to public safety issues throughout our state, and it costs this station nearly $96,000 a year to produce and air that program. Our running program, and I'm sure you're all very well aware of that one, has to do with voter information and making sure we have an informed populace that go to the polls to decide who's going to lead our state. Costs this station $62,000 last year. We produced 44 hours during that series. 33 of those hours went statewide. KAKM's production capacity and access to the public broadcasting service allows for a substantial amount of information about Alaska to be seen across the United States. Let me give you three quick examples, if I may. The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, and the Alaska Seafood Marketing is a very high priority for the diversification of our state's economy. In 1984, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute declined to support a KAKM production grant of a seven-part series on cooking Alaskan seafood because they can only spend promotion money outside of Alaska. KAKM produced a smaller version of that series and offered it to PTV stations nationwide in December of 1986. So far, 33 stations in 27 states have aired this series, marketing at its best. 2.5 hours of Alaska and Alaskan seafood in millions of American homes. The cost to the state, not one nickel more than what was given to this station in state grant. Arctic science policy, an effort to provide all Americans with a better understanding of the scientific, economic, cultural, and military aspects of an Arctic environment on humans and human endeavors. KAKM and the Arctic Information and Data Center, put together with a grant from the Pacific Mountain Network, produced a one-hour documentary about the aurora, its cultural, scientific, economic, and military significance. It has now been seen in over 50 cities throughout the lower 48 states. Tourism is primary in the diversification of our state's economy. Tourism ranks very high. Once again, the problem is marketing Alaska to a potential visitors in the lower 48. KAKM has recently produced a half-hour documentary entitled Denali Flyers. It's the story of Lowell Thomas and the other men who fly the beautiful and dangerous ice fields of Mount McKinley. It is an absolutely stunning visual impact and most compelling as a means of stimulating people to visit the Great Land, and will soon be offered nationwide as a way of public by way of the public television satellite system. I point these examples out to ask, why should the state invest thousands, if not millions of dollars outside the state in pursuit of a state public policy? Isn't it better to keep the work and the dollars in Alaska? In 1987, KAKM received 14% less in state grant than it received in 1986 and in 85. We have not seen an increase in state support in 3 years. In fact, over that time, we have received a 14% decrease. That decrease cost KAKM 6 full-time employees and 15% of our broadcasting day. There are only four. Here are only four programs that we did not produce in 1987 because of state budget cuts. A major documentary about Anwar that would have been offered to the entire PBS system. An in-depth documentary about the Kenai River and the problem of salmon allocation in that river. A live two-way satellite interconnected program between KAKM and Asahi Broadcasting of Osaka, Japan, about the North Pacific salmon fishery. A five-part series about Alaska's first governors. We currently have 18 hours of interviews with Alaska's first four governors, including 2.5 hours with the late Governor Egan, which has never been seen. The thrust of this series has to do with each of these men's vision of Alaska and what they hope to accomplish in office. And now, how the reality of life changed those visions. You're going to hear from a lot of people today that are all professionals in a very, very positive way. These folks in public broadcasting do it because they love it, not because of the money. They do it because of service, not for profit. One quick comment on public broadcasting salaries. I heard a comment about that the other day. I have one comment. Hogwash. I have a friend down here, Ed Clark. He runs a gas station. He employs a mechanic in that gas station. And if you go in to get your car fixed, he'll charge you for that. But if you stop by there at night, there's a guy in a little booth that simply takes your money. That's the kind of relationship that exists in public radio today. If you want somebody to push a button and run an automated tape for 6.5 hours, you can do it for $4 an hour. But if you want to tell a radio or television professional that can make television programs that are relevant to the community, then sometimes you have to pay a bit more. Mr. Chairman, I have a number of other things I'd like to say, but I understand that you're very short on time. And so with that, I will conclude my remarks and ask you if you have any questions.
Elmo, thank you very much. And as I indicated in our previous conversation, that testimony that you don't feel has had an opportunity to be put on record, why, please send to us. And once again, the address is House Special Committee on Telecommunication, P.O. Box V, V is in Victory, Juneau, Alaska, 99811. And, you know, even in this outreach that we've done this morning, where we've had an opportunity to talk to almost each station except one in the South 48, which I'm going to be talking to in just a second, we've still only reached a small fraction of the people that obviously have a feeling about this. And to those of you, I want to say that what we're doing is building a body of information so that it can be presented to Governor Cooper and to the House and to the Senate. This has not been done in the past. Simply because of our riches, we've kind of gone from year to year just expecting it was happening. And I think as Alaskans, we've got to take a look at how we can communicate more and better and efficiently still deal with the budgetary problems it faces. For a moment, I would like to go to Richard Taylor, professor of journalism and public communication from the University of Alaska in Anchorage. And Richard has been standing, has been online, I understand, in the Buckeye State of Ohio in Toledo. Is that correct, Richard? If you are, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Representative Boucher. Because I'm so far away, I'd like to make sure that I can be heard clearly before I make some comments.
You're 5x5. In fact, we hear you as well as on Alaska.
Thank you, Representative Boucher, and hello from the cold country. I've been listening intently to everyone's comments, and it's so gratifying for those of us who have our nose in the book so often, looking for trends and reasons and causes and justifications to hear from people if the concerns really are in various areas of the state. I think what's particularly impressive is the consistency and the consensus that exists among people in various parts of Alaska for one primary utilization of radio, in particular, and to some extent television, and that is localism and Alaskanism. We've thrown around all kinds of notions here about systems and technologies, and some notions about uses and applications, including catchwords that none of us have really figured out quite yet, things like entertainment and education. And yet, it seems that none of those words seem to be used by people. What they're using are things like local information, things like weather, things like messages, things like local culture, things like sharing from one community to the other, things like Nels Anderson saying, "I want to know what's going on in Haines." Those are the things that count. I think what's most impressive is that when those comments were made, most of the time they were made regarding radio. I think with television, we have some real concerns here. We have to question where things have gone since the early 70s when television got started in Alaska. We've been very technologically intense. We haven't really figured out how to localize those technologies. When it comes to television especially, it's been a real concern. Television all over the world has been the mass of the mass media. It's been one of those highly centralized technologies. Fortunately for all of us, that's changing. Television is demassifying, just like the other media have. The question is, how are we now, with the resources dwindling so quickly, are we going to keep a vision for the future? I think that vision, just as things have gone with the other media and as they've gone with radio, that vision is toward localism. What that means in terms of technology is probably more a person's VCR than it is a satellite transponder. Our delivery systems with television are changing. They're localizing, including cable as well as VCRs. I think that's something we can be excited about, because it may be that the state has an opportunity to change its direction away from the funding of highly centralized delivery systems and toward the funding of things that respond to the kinds of comments people made today, namely localism and Alaskanism. I want to give you a few quick numbers, because, as you say, Representative Boucher, the main concern here is information. I've written a paper titled Alaska Television Services, A Crisis in Programming. And I want to share with you some of the information that I have, because, again, the main idea here is to get as much of that sort of information as possible. In the case of television, I'm going to address my comments quickly only to television, because that's been the subject of the paper. I think many people talk quite a bit about radio. I'd like to mention a few words about TV only. I think there are clearly some increasingly important issues now at the same time that we're supposed to be making budget decisions. One is, for example, the increase in cost per household to deliver RatNet to households who only have that alone as a television resource. You know, originally when RatNet was started, the idea was that this is really the only choice for people. Well, the number of households for whom RatNet is the only choice is now around 5,000 households. The cost per household of delivering RatNet, if you only include the $3.5 million current RatNet funding level, and you don't even consider the other infrastructural costs and DOA and so forth, is around $62 per month per household, and that's a fairly high price for a single-channel television service. As cable begins to penetrate the rural communities as it has, we will have a credibility problem in comparing the cost of delivering RatNet with cable services. Of course, the first comment that people will bring up is that those cable services will bypass any concept of regionalism or localism. But, of course, we know that RatNet is 94% non-Alaska programming, so capturing that 6% that RatNet currently provides may not be an overwhelming task. It's something we have to consider. I'll finish up with a few more quick thoughts. Again, we must be concerned that as the funding for television services, state-supported television services, declines, we have to be concerned that it may be declining in a way that does not respond to the kinds of comments that were made today about localism. Namely, we know that the funding for television services declined about 33% from 86 to 87, but the allocations for the production of Alaska materials declined 55%. It was cut more than in half, from $2.5 million to $1.1 million. I think we need to be concerned whether that matches people's concerns for local extent, and I hope that in spite of the obvious and important concern for the state and for government not to be involved in making decisions about what people see, the state at the same time has to face the reality that its policies and its appropriations may, in fact, determine that people see some things and not others. And I think that the fact that the public has a clear and consistent desire or expressed desire to share information among each other in their communities indicates that the state must turn its attention to the extent to which the television services money is regarding the production of the Alaska materials is dwindling at a rate considerably faster than for technological services. I have quite a bit of other statistical information that I'm anxious to share with anyone who would like to have it, including, of course, the proper citations about where it came from. And I hope, again, what I'm stressing is that as we consider alternatives, that we stress Alaska materials and we stress matching the systems we develop to the needs that people have expressed. And thank you.
Richard, thank you very much. And if you would, anything that you feel might add to your testimony, I know that you'll share that with us. I'm going to go to Juneau. Russell Nelson, who is the Bristol Bay representative for RatNet, is here with us. And Russell, could we hear from you as a member of RatNet? In fact, for those who might not be aware of it, would you briefly tell us what the function of RatNet means? There may be some here that are not aware of that.
Okay, I'm a member of the RatNet Council. My name's Russell Nelson. And on the RatNet Council, our job is programming. We don't go out there and fix the stations when they break down. Our job is to find out what the people in our areas want to watch and our viewing public wants to see. And then we sit down in a board meeting and vote on what our area wants. Out in the Bristol Bay area, I've done several surveys, and I make my decisions based upon the surveys that I do in the area. And some people say that maybe they want night court at an earlier date, and other people say they don't want to see it. You know, in the surveys that I do, I try to tally up and find out how many people are supporting something, and then I try to put that on in the time zone that they want it on at. And I don't agree with the things that some of the people in my community like neither at times, but I try to do what the community wants and not what I want. And that's the purpose for doing these surveys. RatNet, on the channel, RatNet channel, we give to the Department of Education, or we have started just recently, giving them from the hours of 2 a.m. to 3:30 a.m. for transmitting educational programming so that the school systems out in the communities can record these programs at that hour and then show them at their own leisure and in their own time frame during the day. When if you put out a program during the day for education at a certain time, all the schools would have to try to conform to your time zone. I feel that this school shouldn't be made to conform to our time zone. We let them have airwave time at 2:30 or 2 a.m. to 3:30 a.m. so that they can record it and play it in their classrooms at the time that they so choose. Also, the universities use our airwaves use RatNet from 3:30 a.m. to 5:30 a.m. We have 248 receivers and transmitters that our head end transmits this programming to. And that's 248 communities that you'd be knocking out of Channel 10 or the RatNet channel if you were to take it off the air. It's the only source of national news that many of these villages have. In our area alone, there's 32 villages that I represent. If you cut out RatNet, you'd give a blackout of TV to 29 villages, a complete blackout. The remaining three villages that do have cable, you'd be only reaching maybe 50% of the population maximum because the rest of the people can't afford to buy cable TV. With the radio station, on the radio station also, since we're also on that subject, you would knock out over 32 villages in the Bristol Bay region alone. The people out in the high seas, out the crabbers, wouldn't have any communication with people sending messages over. Getting back to RatNet, the emergency use of RATnet is something that, that not very many people have spoke on. I'm sure that there's many, if something nationally happened, that's the only way you could get, you can get the information. We have many educational programs on that with RATnet, children's educational programs like Sesame Street and Nova, and it's our only source for statewide news. Without it, we do have the radio, but we have also in Anchorage they produce a very fine statewide news program, and we also get local news through that statewide news program. Capital 87, which is really important out in these communities, it's the only way that we can see what the legislators are doing down in Juneau. We might hear it on the radio, but it's the only way that we can actually see them in session and making laws that affect us. We really need it. It's not a luxury to us. It's something that's absolutely necessary. And before you'd cut out RATnet or public broadcasting, I think you'd have to look really hard at what else you can get rid of. I mean, we'd have to be absolutely flat broke and there's no money left over, I think, before you can even consider cutting out RATnet or public broadcasting. It's vital to our survival. The things that our children learn on these programming, on this programming out in the villages, can affect them when they come to a city to go to college later on in life. They learn about things like stoplights that you may take for granted in the city, whereas out in the villages, they've never seen one unless it was on TV. It's essential. It's really needed. We have to have it. That's all I have.
Thank you very much, Russell. We appreciate your input. And we'd also, representing you primarily from Bristol Bay, but I'm sure there are members of the RATnet group, and we'd appreciate your input. Here we've been statewide, every place from Toledo to Unalaska, which is, I'd say, a good third of the way around the world with a system that's in place, which few states have. So I think if we recognize that communications is many things to many people, but we are rapidly learning here in Alaska that it's more than entertainment. It's totally a way of life. I guess what we've said earlier is not just how we react, because the governor has the heavy responsibility of dealing with the state in a period of declining revenues. But what we ought to do is take the approach to how we can do what we've been doing and do it better and still be in line with the declining revenues. So I'm hoping that there's some positive suggestions that come from the various people out there. Here we've been on almost 2 hours today. We've just got a few seconds to go. And I'm going to apologize to those of you across Alaska. We've tried to touch each community at least once. But we are going to be back on Thursday. We'll continue this with another 2 hours of testimony. And my apology to those of you who can only be here today. But we in the House Special Committee on Telecommunication, indeed Governor Cooper, the House and the Senate are anxious to hear from you, because it'll be your input that has a great effect on the final decisions that are made in regard to budgeting telecommunications in the state. So any testimony that wasn't given today, would you please address to the House Special Committee on Telecommunication, Pouch V, V is in Victory, Juneau, Alaska. And that will be included as a part of the record. I'm going to thank the telecommunicators throughout the state for making this possible. We'll be back on Tuesday, and we hope that we will be able to add other points in Alaska that haven't been heard from. And thank you very much for your input, and my apologies to those of you who may not have had a chance to speak today. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Why can't we do it next Thursday? We'll change those. We'll be back online next Thursday. We can change those around.
Dr. Boucher, Anchorage wants to know what time on Thursday and which Thursday, whether it's this Thursday or next.
It's this coming Thursday and, if necessary, next Thursday, and it'll be from 8:30 to 10:30.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right. I didn't get to see you. I wasn't aware. I think what we got to do is build a body of information. Yep, we'll continue. There were, I would say, possibly 175 people out there that didn't hurt. And this is pretty indicative. Every community was on the line. Others screaming because they can't get on the line.
Okay, great. I'll probably be here Thursday. I'll probably be here with another campaign.
Okay. Hoping enough to get it in writing. If I can give it to you
okay,
now.
Okay, all right. No, excellent, excellent. Thank you. Well,
I just hope you're able to hear from a lot of these folks.
Well, this is what we need. We need to build and hey, come back.
Well, I'll try and come in on Thursday, but I figured as long as I had it, I'll give it to you guys.
All right. Well, you can. Why don't you do it and then remind me on Thursday, huh?
That's fine, but either way, I just wanted to get this stuff.
Okay, all right, fine.
See you Thursday. Do you remember the name of the judge?
Yeah, I don't
know. It's in the old room. You're just throwing the paper at me. Go ahead. This is right, the principal. Go ahead, pull that one on. Oh, yeah.